Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
This is Mad Daddy on the Saturday flight from the Tower of Power, the very top story in my wavy, gravy, groovy, gravy rocket laboratory, where we're bending every effort and making every test to be sure that our records are always the best. You see, well, before we play them on this crazy, wavy air, we dip them in this smoking vat with extra special care. Wearing thick, big rubber gloves and using special tongs, we make the Mad Dad acid test on the up-and-coming songs.
Yeah, maybe we'll have some songs, too. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One. And here alongside us is...
This is CW. Greetings and felicitations from a galaxy not that far away.
Dave, you're from a lot of
maybe
things.
Maybe we'll find
you're
you on Spaceship
Weirdness.
One.
You're from Weirdness, you're from Spaceship One, and you're from Eerie House. Like, you're a man about town.
Indeed.
I am. A man without a home, yeah.
A man with many homes.
Three different homes.
Many homes, which is a good thing. Because if you get kicked out of one, yeah, you've got two more. But we're still celebrating Midnight 2. Count them, two terrific tales. Both of the investigation type with Barry Craig and Johnny Dollar.
The action-packed expense account.
Yeah,
yeah,
best for last.
Interesting. Johnny Dollar doesn't have a lot to do with the investigation that he's sent there for. But I tell you what, guys, this Johnny Dollar is going to put you on the edge of your seat. It's a great story. Doesn't have much to do with the reason he was sent there, but it's a great story. And then, what's interesting in listening to this Barry Craig, if you've listened to a lot of The Saints with Vincent Price, you'll find one of those very, very similar to this, at least the first 5-8 minutes of it. Very interesting that they stole the script from the other show.
Oh, wow.
And Vincent Price would have been first, so they stole it from Vince. You know, just
uh-oh,
Vince
plagiarism.
Know how many there are is no reason to steal it from Vince. Sorry,
nope.
CW, go ahead.
Hey, thought we put on a little bit of summertime music. I hope, CW, you had as nice of weather as we had here in Ohio. We actually hit 80 degrees.
Oh, my.
Very
nice, I guess. Spring and summer are finally here with, what, a snowstorm around the corner?
Yeah.
It could happen.
We had snow like 3 days ago. 80 degrees today. Welcome to Ohio.
Yep. Hey, Angel is in the chat along with Fogsbane. Thanks for joining us live in the chat. And good old Bob, too. Hiya,
good old Bob. Yep.
Ugga bugga boo boo.
Ugga boo ugga boo boo ugga. There you go.
That's what he said. All right. I'll mesmerize that one day.
Yes, you will. Yee bee bee, the chilly bee bee. Yes, you'll mesmerize it.
Yeah, beautiful weather in Ohio. Got on the hands and knees and pulled up a bunch of weeds out of my garden.
Yeah, I cleaned the garage. That was my chore today. So.
Just a change of the season. Got to clean, got to straighten up. Whereas in the winter, 5 feet of snow buries everything.
That's true, yeah.
Yes, all the bodies are buried.
That's right.
Yeah, but you can't dig down deep enough to hide the bodies, so you snow covers it up, but the snow eventually melts, and then you have all kind of questions from police, you know, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, that just came in with that last snow drift. I don't know where that came from. from.
It's what the dog is for. Special treats. Special treats.
No. Phone.
I can't picture Pal being angry at anything. That guy's got the life of Ryan. Let me tell you. Spoiled brat.
Oh, all of our animals are spoiled. That's why you have them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, the little monsters. Good tales tonight, and we haven't... We've only played Barry Craig once before, maybe?
Twice before. Once in 2020, before? Once in 21, and now here in 2022, another Barry Craig. So at that rate, we'll run out of these episodes in about 2057, something like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll be alive, sure.
Well, I hope I can get Wi-Fi on Mars. Might be kind of hard, but there'll be a delay time thing. But hey, I'll be out there.
Let me put it this way: if I'm alive in 57, I probably won't be aware of that fact.
Yeah. Oh well. Fine. No, I don't plan to be. Not that we ever plan. We always live longer than we plan. But, yeah, no. Yeah.
Not Jimmy Dean. James Dean.
James Dean. Jimmy Dean.
He might have planned a little longer than he got.
Well,
I don't know,
James Dean, yeah.
Live fast, die hard, lead a good-looking corpse. And I think that was probably his motto. At least that's what occurred.
I don't know. I saw the car. I don't know how good looking that was, but
yeah,
he'd
have been pretty mangled. Yeah,
yeah.
Not much.
That car
there.
Did not look good. Did not look good. But what's going to sound great is this episode of Barry Craig called "Visitor at Midnight."
Yeah, Barry Craig, good old William Gargan, who was in a ton of B movies. Usually a support, occasionally as a lead in B movies, and on television, he was Martin Keene, Private Eye, and I think that was on the Dumont Network. It was live, so there's only a few of those that survived. Yeah, he worked for 2 years. I'm looking here. Oh, I did see. Oh, yeah, October 3rd, 1951 to June 30th, 1955. So it was. 4 whole seasons on NBC radio. So very, very interesting that the guy who made a living being in B movies also got to be Barry Craig, confidential investigator on radio.
Well, we might as well get started with part one of Visitor at Midnight, originally broadcast way back in...
May 12th, 1955.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
It never pays to be friendly with murderers. Give them an inch and they'll take a yard, usually rope, tied around your throat and attached to the nearest rafter.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Craig speaking. If I try hard, I can remember back to the days before I was in this business, when on going to bed at night, I would always look under my bed. No, not for a blonde, a burglar. There never was one, though. So as the years went by, I stopped looking. I just went to bed. On this particular night, however, I had barely dropped off to sleep when I heard a noise at my window. I was practically asleep, and besides, I wasn't in the mood for burglars. The burglar, however, had other ideas.
Craig.
I'm asleep.
You can't see me, can you?
No, and I'd be happier if I couldn't hear you.
I can see you, however. It helps me aim the gun I'm pointing at you more accurately.
Well, I'd hate to have your aim suffer.
Mr. Craig, I need some advice. I'm a novelist. I'm writing a book about murder. I'm calling it The Unsolvable Crime.
Well, now that you've got that off your chest...
What I came here for was to have you tell me whether or not the murder my book is about is really unsolvable.
Well, why me?
Because you've had a lot to do with murder, for one thing. Because you're not a policeman, for another.
No argument so far.
The man to be murdered, in my book, that is, has heart disease. He's a crooked broker, a man who deserves to die.
Uh-huh. And he suffers from heart disease.
For this illness, he takes daily, at stated hours, capsules containing heart medicine. His life depends on these capsules. Now then, the murderer, in my book, that is, decides to poison the broker.
Well, that's against the law.
Yes. Poisoning, but without poison.
Well, get to the next chapter.
The murderer steals one of the capsules, pours the medicine out, and replaces the medicine with ordinary water. Eventually, the financier takes the capsule, which contains water instead of medicine. He dies of heart failure.
Well, not bad.
Thank you. The poisoner can't be traced through the poison he bought because he didn't buy any. An autopsy would show no poison in his victim's body since there wouldn't be any. Most likely, the murdered man would be assumed to have died a natural death. Well?
Well, what?
Is the crime unsolvable?
Oh, at the moment, I can't see any flaws in it.
Well, if you can't, then I don't imagine the book reviewers will.
Don't you mean the police?
Why should the police be interested in a book I'm writing?
Why should the book reviewers be interested in the murder you're committing?
You're not serious.
You are.
Well, I'm afraid I must leave now. No, no, don't move. I still have the gun pointing at you. If I had to shoot you, it wouldn't be an unsolvable crime, perhaps. But what good would that do you? Good night, Mr. Craig. Pleasant dreams.
Gentleman in the dark left quickly and efficiently, so I went back to sleep. When I got up the next morning, I decided to pretend the whole thing hadn't happened. There was nothing I could do, and maybe my midnight visitor had really been a novelist. I cherished that happy thought until breakfast.
Your toast, Mr. Craig, in the morning paper.
Thank you.
Well, you're up early this morning, aren't you?
Well, I'm glad you noticed. Any resemblance between this toast and toast is purely coincidental. What does your chef do? Tan the stuff? Hey.
I beg your pardon?
Very interesting news item here. Halfway down the front page. Take a look.
James W. Baker, noted broker, dies of heart attack as police prepare to arrest him for embezzlement. A friend of yours?
No, but he was a crooked broker and he had a bad heart.
Well, is that important, Mr. Craig?
It depends on whether he took his medicine in capsules.
What depends, sir?
Murder. Sure, maybe it was a coincidence. But if it was, it was the kind of coincidence that goes better in books than in reality. James W. Baker was listed in the phone book, so feeling that maybe the long arm of coincidence had strained a muscle in this particular case, I decided to pay the late Mr. Baker a friendly visit.
Hello.
Hello. This is the Baker home, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I'm Mr. Baker's niece. And you?
Barry Craig. I'm an old friend of your uncle's.
You're not old.
Well...
And you're not a friend of my uncle's. But come in anyway.
Thank you.
My name is Sandra.
I realize maybe I shouldn't have come today. You must be all broken up by your uncle's death.
Who, me?
Well, the family.
Well, that's me. I'm the family.
Your uncle must have been a lonely man.
He didn't mind. He had me. And the market. And all those people. He was swindling, of course. And there were Mr. Hansen and Tommy.
Who's Tommy?
Oh, sort of stunted youth. Uncle's secretary. Very anemic. I always ignore him.
And Hansen?
Hansen was Uncle's lawyer. And I fondly suspect as big a crook as Uncle was. But very spatted, you know?
Spatted?
Yes, on the shoes and gardenia'd in the buttonhole. And I have a sneaking suspicion whiskied in the liver.
Hmm, sounds nice. Anybody else close to Uncle?
No.
Then it boils down to one of you three.
What does?
Who's happy now that Uncle's dead?
Well, I am. Hansen is. Tommy is.
Well, it just about covers the field. Well, why is everybody so happy?
Uncle had some money. I get it now. Hansen stole from Uncle, and he won't go to jail now. Tommy was implicated in Uncle's swindling. Tommy won't go to jail now.
And who has a very deep, rasping voice, with the trick of dropping his voice at the end of every sentence?
I don't have a very deep voice.
Are Hansen and Tommy around?
Yes, they are. They're sitting around practicing grief-stricken looks for the funeral. That happy event is this afternoon. I better get dressed.
Sandra.
Hurry.
Oh, who's hurrying?
I am. Who are you?
Barry Craig. And you?
Well, I'm Tommy. I'm Mr. Baker's secretary.
Well, in his condition, he doesn't need a secretary.
Well, then, I'm Mr. Baker's former secretary. No, I'm the former Mr. Baker's secretary. No,
I get it. Relax.
I am relaxed.
Then why are you in such a hurry?
Well, I have to go out to hire some mourners, haven't I?
You have to hire some mourners?
Well, sure, it wouldn't look nice if there were only three of us at the funeral.
No, especially since you'll all be grinning from ear to ear. Incidentally, has your voice ever been deeper?
Heavens, no. Ta-ta.
Goodbye. Oh, back again. Oh, no. Hello?
Good morning. I'm in a hurry. Hansen's my name.
Well, why are you in such a hurry?
Well, you see, my tailor is expecting me.
Your tailor?
Well, you'd hardly expect me to attend Mr. Baker's funeral in this, would you?
Impossible.
What are you doing here?
Looking for a man with a deep voice.
Sorry, mine isn't. Goodbye. Why are you looking for a man with a deep voice?
Well, he told me how Mr. Baker was going to be murdered.
Well, of course, that explains everything. What did you say?
That's what I said.
But Mr. Baker died of heart failure.
Well, that's another theory. I like mine better.
Dear me. If I only had the time, but my tailor, you know. Goodbye.
I stayed in my chair for a while, staring at the door that had shut behind Hansen, wondering. I'd been handed my three suspects. There was something else, though, that might help, it occurred to me, in a bookstore. And I chose a bookstore in the same neighborhood as Baker's house.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hello. Do you carry medical books?
Why, yes, we do.
Would you happen to have one on the diseases of the heart?
Well, now, we don't stock many. We had one, but we sold it last week.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'm sorry. No, it's funny. The person I sold it to was a very nervous gentleman. I rather suspected at the time that he might have a heart condition himself.
I see. Do you recall his name?
Name? Oh, yes. Yes, I remember. It was Hansen. That's right, Hansen.
Mr. Hansen's taste in literature was interesting. It occurred to me Mr. Hansen himself, if I could pin him down, might be more interesting still. Hello, Mr. Hansen.
Oh, Mr. Craig. Come in.
Thank you. Well, how did the funeral go this afternoon?
Very sad. Very sad indeed. Funerals upset me.
Yeah, I can see how that would be. Have you ever tried reading for your nerves? It's supposed to be very soothing.
Oh, I'm afraid I have no patience for books.
Not even books on heart disease?
What was that? Why, I... Excuse me. Hello? Oh. Yes. Yes, of course. At once. Goodbye.
Bad news? You turn pale.
I'm terribly shocked. Tommy, you know him?
Baker's secretary? Yes, I know him.
Well, it seems that something's happened to him.
What?
He's dead.
This not only upset Hansen, it set him in motion. The direction was the Baker house. I approved and went along. Hansen, who phoned you?
Sandra. Apparently, she'd been visiting friends, returned home, and found him.
Of course, it might have been an accidental death, which would mean another point of coincidence, but I don't think so. However, if he was murdered...
You seem to have murder on your brain. You said something about the police thinking Baker was murdered, too.
Not the police. Me.
Hello.
Hello, Miss Sander. Have you notified the police?
Yes, I phoned them just a few minutes ago. This is his room. I heard the shots.
Well, when?
About an hour ago.
You phoned Hansen here only 15 minutes ago.
Well, I didn't know what it was then. Tommy was going to join me downstairs. When he didn't, I realized it must have been a shot. There he is.
Yes. Not at all pretty. Definitely dead. There's a note on his desk.
A suicide note?
Let's see. Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be. It reads, I killed Baker because if he'd been arrested, I would have gone to jail too. I thought I got away with it, but the police suspect he was murdered. I can't take it, so excuse the blood. The note's signed Tommy.
Wow. That sort of clears that up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Except for one thing.
What's that?
Tommy's voice wasn't deep enough.
It's not deep enough.
Oh. It's a little bit of excitement here. This is going to be a night of excitement and investigation with Barry Craig. And later on, of course, one of our favorites, Johnny Dollar.
Yes.
And this is the favorite
voice deep enough for you?
Bob Bailey's a great voice. The problem was his voice never matched his body type. So that's why he didn't make it in movies or even really in television. So one thing about
John
this,
Wayne,
you know,
Mickey Mouse figure.
Barry Craig, they did try a TV pilot for it, starring Gargan, and it was written, directed by, again, this is before he did Peter Gunn, by Blake Edwards. It was presented on ABC's Pepsi Cola Playhouse as Death the Hard Way on October 17th, 1954, but it never got picked up as a series. So he did get to reprise his role one time on television, much like Alan Ladd did on Four Star Playhouse, I think it was, or General Electric Playhouse, one of those two. So yeah, just interesting a bit. You know, we always talk about the stars, guys. You know one guy we never talk about is the announcer. And the announcer for this particular show is none other than Dominic George Don Pardo.
Really?
And, yep.
Oh,
he was
wow.
the announcer for this.
Dan
he was
Pardo.
American. Yep, he was on NBC for a 70-year tenure. 70 years, 7 decades. And,
wow.
Of course, he was earlier incarnations of The Price is Right, Jackpot, Jeopardy, Three on the Match, Winning Streak, and NBC Nightly News. And, of course, his longest and best-known job, NBC Saturday Night Live. He held that for 38 years.
Talk about
wow.
security.
Holy talk God. About a retirement yeah. package. Oh, my word.
He didn't have one. He didn't need one, I guess. Just,
yes.
You know, there and actually, there was a couple times he retired. Even from he retired from NBC, but kept the NBC gig because Lorne Michaels wanted him there. And you know, for a while, he was doing the announcements from from his home in Arizona, but they didn't like that. He wanted him there, so he was back to flying weekly between the Arizona and New York City for the Saturday Night Live programs. Unbelievable.
Incredible.
It's a hell
okay,
of a career.
What do I have to do to get a job like that?
I'm telling you. Hey, we better.
It's something that Dale. It's something that Dale and I would be envious about. He participated in a Weird Al Yankovic video I lost on Jeopardy, which
was in it.
They had the original host of Jeopardy, which was Art Fleming, and had Don Pardo, as well as Dr. Demento, and Yankovic's parents were in that video as well.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Gosh.
Awesome. Star-studded evening.
He also did a bit with, I'm looking for it here. He did a bit with, Billy the Mountain. Frank what? The crazy guy. Is that Frank Zappa?
Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. I'm looking for it here. I just can't see it. I saw it earlier, and I just can't find it now. Oh, there. Okay, here it is. It must be in here. Yeah. When it was announced, after Saturday Night, which cried out cold open. No, that's not it. All right. There it is. Okay. In the musical performance by Frank Zappa, reciting a verse of the song, I'm the Slime. Pardo subsequently reprised the role on a live recorded version of the song for Frank Zappa in New York album. It was not featured in the first release in 1978, but appears in the 1993 CD release.
Mm-hmm.
He provided narration for the songs The Illinois Enema Bandit and Punky's Whips. Yeah, that's what it is. A business dispute between Zappa and his recording company at the time of Punky's Whips being removed from the 1978 album, but the song was reinstated again in the 1993 CD. So there you go.
And thank goodness. We got a lot of radio. Let's wrap up.
We do.
Craig, Visitor at Midnight. We'll be back.
Dun, 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 dun. The police showed up in a very little while. Tommy's death seemed to be an obvious suicide. I think the police attributed it to insanity. They didn't know what he meant about Baker's having been murdered. As for me, there didn't seem to be much of anything to do at the moment, so I went home and went to bed. This, it would appear, was going to be a case where I didn't sleep. I resisted the impulse to throw the phone out the nearest window and answered it. I'm asleep, and so should you be.
Craig.
Now that you know I'm at home, good night.
Wait a minute. Craig, you told Sandra about someone who came to you in the middle of the night and told you about Baker's murder.
Yes, I did.
You described that voice very carefully. Craig, would you like to hear it again?
Very much.
Then come down here at once. The Kent Club on Marshall Boulevard, and I can arrange it for you. The man with the voice you described is here.
I'd pretty much given up expecting to hear that voice again. But if Hansen said he'd heard it, then it was something for me to find out about. From the time I got the phone call to the time I got to the club, it must have been about a half an hour.
Craig, I've been waiting for you.
That was the idea, wasn't it?
Yes, but that man whose voice I overheard, whose voice resembled the one you told Sandra about.
Well?
He's gone.
Well, that's not so good. You know who the man is?
No, but I do know something just as good.
What's that?
I know where the man went. I heard him tell his cab driver.
Then let's go there.
Of course, Craig, you realize that I'm not absolutely sure it's the man you want.
Me? I'm grabbing at straws. Anything at the moment is worth trying.
That voice did sound like your description. Baker belonged to the club, too.
It's a possibility. Hanson, Sandra told me you'd been stealing money from Baker.
I don't think I care for that kind of conversation.
I'm not making conversation. I'm asking questions. Was she telling the truth?
What difference does it make?
If Baker was murdered, it might make a lot of difference.
You say if Baker was murdered. Aren't you sure?
We'll know better, won't we, when we meet this man whose voice you overheard.
Yes, we'll know better. The only thing is, suppose something happens to him?
Hey, are we still in the United States? We've been traveling for hours.
Apparently he lives farther out than we realized. Shouldn't be much farther. Craig, mind if I ask you something?
Go ahead.
It's about Tommy. I can see him committing suicide, all right. He never impressed me as being much of anything. But somehow I can't see him murdering Baker.
People rarely kill other people in front of witnesses.
That's not what I meant. Craig, are you sure Baker was murdered?
No.
But you said before...
I said I suspected it. That's something else. However, I am sure of one thing.
What's that?
I'm sure Tommy...
Yes?
...was murdered. I was never a Boy Scout, so I don't know very much about direction in the country. But I was surprised at where I wound up. Where the car wound up was a bumpy dirt road in a very secluded hunk of landscape.
Well, that must be the house up ahead.
Yes, and the house is dark.
Probably took him less time to get here. Must have gone to bed.
Probably.
There's a mailbox. House number on it. Yes, this is it.
Well, let's go visit.
Craig, do you think he'll recognize you?
Sure. I couldn't see him, but he saw me clearly enough.
Well, that's not so good. Are you armed, in case he tries anything?
No, but maybe he won't try anything.
Suppose he refuses to say anything, to speak at all, when he sees you.
That'll answer our question just as well, won't it?
I suppose so. Shall I ring?
Sure.
Well, that would be warning him, though, wouldn't it? Suppose he hears the doorbell, looks out, sees you. He might run away.
He might.
Look, why don't I go around to the back? Then in case he tries to run...
That's a good idea. You do that.
All right. And be careful.
Sure, I'll be very careful. The moon picked out the door, glinted on the metal doorbell. I pushed it. It was a nice night, not too warm, not too cold. However, a guy named Craig was cold. Walking into a dark house with somebody waiting on the other side of the door could have its unpleasant aspects. Nobody answered the doorbell. I hadn't expected anyone to, so I tried the handle. It was very dark inside. I pulled out a book of matches and hesitated. In the darkness, when you strike a match, you make a very nice target. I wasn't sure I liked the idea. On the other hand, I needed a little more action. It would settle things. I lit a match. There was a light switch on the wall, and I flipped it on. Then I walked into the parlor. There wasn't much more to the house than that. Parlor, bedroom, kitchen, and that was all. The bedroom door was open, and no one was in there. The kitchen door was shut, but no light leaked out from under the door. Offhand, you'd have said nobody was home. And maybe nobody was. So I sat down near the table lamp that was the room's only illumination. Somebody made noises in the kitchen. Could have been mice. It could have been the mystery man with the deep voice, or... it could have been a high wind that was slowly swinging the kitchen door open. I decided, whatever it was, that I didn't want the lamp to glare in its eyes, so... turned off the lamp and quietly shifted from my position next to the lamp to the other side of the room. That even matters up. It was dark in the kitchen, it was dark in the parlor, and nobody could see anybody. My unlit friend shifted slightly, and I began to get bored. So I grabbed what felt like an ashtray and threw it against the wall on the opposite side of the room. The little stranger didn't like ashtrays. He tried to shoot the one I threw, but the gun flash gave his position away. I know where you are. My gun's pointing at where you are, so drop yours. didn't work. I hadn't expected it to, which is why I moved fast after speaking. I figured he still had three more bullets, any one of which hitting me could be painful, so... Drop the popgun, huh?
All right.
Thanks. We can use a little electricity now. Hello, Hanson.
Craig.
My, you're bleeding. Your arm?
Yes, I didn't know it was you.
Who'd you think it was?
Well, I waited outside for a while. Nothing happened, so I came in.
And then when you didn't recognize my voice in the dark, you started shooting at me, huh?
That's right.
Thinking I was the owner of this house?
Of course.
But, Hanson, how could you think that when you yourself own this house?
What? But I don't understand.
You're not very subtle. When you asked me if I was armed before we got into the house...
You said you weren't.
Of course. You see, I knew you were going to try to kill me.
What? How did you know that?
Because you overheard the man with the deep voice.
Well, what was wrong with that?
You couldn't have heard him. You see, Hanson, the man with the deep voice is dead. The police were glad to get Hanson, especially after I pointed out to them that Tommy's suicide note was a fake. They couldn't have known that, but I did. As I told Sandra, first about the note, you see, it said, the police suspect Baker was murdered, but the police suspected nothing of the sort.
You did, though.
Yes, but the only one I told was Hanson, and Hanson himself assured me he never spoke to Tommy. Therefore...
Hanson killed Tommy after making him write the note?
Right.
But, Barry, what about the man who spoke to you in the middle of the night? He wasn't Hanson.
No.
Well, he couldn't have been Tommy.
No.
Well, then who was he?
Sandra, there were three people involved in Baker's possible murder, we thought. You, Hanson, and Tommy.
That's so.
Well, we were wrong. There were four people involved.
Four? Who's the fourth?
The murderer. Baker himself.
Oh.
Then we ask, why did the man come to me in the first place?
Well, he said to make sure his method of murdering somebody would never be detected.
Yeah, that's what he said. But in coming to me, didn't he make sure of the very opposite? Wasn't he making sure that it would be detected?
Oh, Barry, you're very, very brilliant.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, Baker knew he was going to jail. He also knew that very probably Hanson would try to murder him. He didn't care very much. He was an old man and a sick one. But he did want to make sure his murderer would be punished. That's funny.
What is?
If Hanson hadn't tried to make doubly sure he was safe, he probably would be safe. I doubt whether there'd have been enough evidence to convict him of your uncle's murder. But he'll hang for Tommy.
You've been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Visitor at Midnight, was written by Louis Vittes. The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator, directed by Andrew C. Love. Our cast included Ken Christie, Kay Stewart, Jack Carroll, Byron Kane, and Jack Crucian. Convicts tell their true life stories on The Loser tonight over most NBC radio stations.
It's a great show. The Losers.
Watch The Losers. Listen to The Losers.
I missed that when I into The Losers.
And if you didn't learn something from that, you'll learn something from this. Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garless Moral of the Story. Scrolling. Damn it, Paris.
Apologies to Gar. Whether it's midnight, noon, or six, it's never a good time to give your intentions to murder someone. But whether it's 10, 2, or 4, it's always a good time for Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper, the swell drink that's inviting, delighting, and exciting. And here is Pretty Peggy Pepper in person.
Bringing joy across the land.
Dr. Pepper.
If you want to lead the band, drink it every day. Energy picks up, and you'll enjoy life more.
Remember Dr. Pepper time, 10 and 2 and 4.
Absolutely terrifying.
Never clap for the commercial. Never clap for the commercial.
Yes. Because they might give us more.
Yes.
Nah, but
that was an interesting tale. Interesting
that was
tale.
A great way to fund these programs, though, is with all the sponsors.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. I'm surprised they didn't have him drinking a Dr. Pepper. I still remember that show that was on a week or two ago where they put in that those crackers, those Rye Krisp crackers all over the place. The character had coffee and Rye Krisp, or was nibbling on a Rye Krisp. Rye Krisp was everywhere.
You don't know.
Leaving crumbs back so they can find their way back after that episode, I guess. I don't know. You never can tell.
Never can.
Catching up.
Go ahead.
What's that? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just chuckling about some of the comments on the chat. Go. You got it.
Michael Kenyon. Okay. Interesting. Okay, but we still got more radio tonight.
Yeah, Dave promises this one is a good'un. A good'un.
A good. It's a suspenseful yarn. Absolutely.
Yep, and it's entitled "The Midnight Sun Matter." That sounds
cool.
Intriguing.
That's another job I'd like to have. Besides Darn Pardo, I'd like to have a job with an action-packed expense account.
Yes, action-packed expense accounts are a nice perk.
They are, especially when you embellish them. But you got to live in order to get that action expense account back. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we might as well live vicariously through Johnny Dollar then, because we're not getting one here on Erie House, that's for sure. Or any kind of any kind of bank, at least right now. Midnight Sun Matter, original broadcast date of
episode number 588 from May 25th, 1958.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Johnny Dollar.
This is Bill Chadwick, Northwest Surety Company.
Howdy, Bill. How are things in Seattle?
Oh, not bad, Johnny, not bad. You tell me, have you ever fallen to the spell of the Yukon?
What are you trying to do, sell me some mining stock?
No, but there's a mine I'd like to have you take a look at.
Up in the Yukon?
Well, actually, it's across the border in Alaska. It's a gold mine, a big one, sitting on top of a rich vein, and... why don't you fly on out here and let me tell you about it?
Why not? Shall I bring my own pick and shovel?
No. No, Johnny.
Huh?
Just be sure you bring your gun.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Northwest Surety Company, Seattle, Washington office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Midnight Sun matter. Item 1, $164.35, transportation to New York, then a mainliner through Chicago to Seattle. The pilot gave us a beautiful view of Mount Rainier and Puget Sound before we sat down, and at 4 p.m. I was in Bill Chadwick's office at 2nd Avenue and Yesler Way.
Oh, I'm glad to see you, Johnny. It's been a long time.
Yeah, hiya, Bill.
Yeah, hey, sit down.
Okay. Now, what was that crack over the phone about bringing along a gun?
Well, the men who moil for gold are a pretty tough bunch, Johnny. And sometimes it even goes for the management of a big mining operation.
Like what, for instance?
Like Universal Consolidated Mining Corporation.
Where's that?
It's north and east of Fairbanks.
Alaska?
Yes, even north of Fort Yukon. That means above the Arctic Circle.
And what's happened up there?
Now, the whole thing sits at the foot of a big glacier.
Oh?
No problem until recently. Now, through some freak of nature, that glacier is changing its course.
No kidding.
And from the look of things, maybe a couple of months, maybe a couple of years, or even 10 years. Anyhow, they seem to think that glacier is going to sweep down over the mines, the town, everything.
I see.
In which case, our company would have to pay for the whole loss.
An all-coverage policy, huh?
Yeah. And it's occurred to me, Johnny, suppose they've suddenly run out of that rich vein they found up there.
You mean that somehow they deliberately caused that glacier to destroy the whole operation?
It's a possibility, isn't it?
Well, a pretty far-fetched one, if you ask me. Change the course of a glacier?
A few sticks of dynamite carefully placed.
Oh, come off it, Bill. Did you ever see a glacier?
Well, why should one that's been following the same path for thousands of years suddenly decide to head for a few million dollars worth of well-insured property? And look, go up there and take a look, will you?
Okay, how do I get there?
One of the company's planes is taking off from here tomorrow morning.
They have their own airplanes?
Oh, sure, a lot of them. Big two-engine speedcraft transports. How else do you think they'd get men and supplies up there? Anyway, you can go along with him. Okay?
Okay, why not? Who knows? Maybe I'll strike it rich, come back loaded with nuggets. Item 2, 31 bucks even for my room at the Benjamin Franklin and a night on the town. The following morning, well, I suppose I should have wondered why a big cargo plane should take off from a tiny airport far out of town with only the pilot and me on board. Yep, I should have wondered.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
And now for another episode in the life of Sergeant Donald Bellwether. My husband.
Good morning, Mrs. Bellwether. Would my lady prefer to have her breakfast in bed this morning?
Oh, what a perfect husband. Thank you, darling.
Ah, here's the tray with the coffee, the toast, and the orange. Oh, fine. I forgot the orange juice. Hold the tray, honey. I'll be right back. Ooh, ooh,
oh, darling, ooh. What happened?
Ooh, I stubbed my toe in a corner of the dresser.
Oh, the National Safety Council was right.
The what?
Last night I read something in a National Safety Council pamphlet.
Oh, Reba, and how can you sit there talking about a pamphlet when I'm dying a slow, tortuous death?
Oh, come over here, darling. I'm sorry.
All right. Now, what's this about the National Safety Council? Did they predict I would stub my toe this morning?
No, silly. It's just a coincidence. Only last night I read the statistics that proved that more home accidents occur in the bedroom of all places.
Yeah?
Not the bathroom or the kitchen or the home workshop. The bedroom.
Yeah, okay. From now on, when I walk around the bedroom, I'm going to wear my combat boots instead of these open-toed hirachi.
Well, that might help, dear. But what everyone should be most careful of is taking medicine in the dark.
Okay, my living safety encyclopedia. I will now fetch your orange.
Aw, you're sweet. And it's just too bad that you nice men are so prone to accidents in the home. And the reason is because you brave men usually tackle the hazardous jobs around the house.
Hey, I'll remember those kind words as I slowly limp back to the kitchen.
One thing in your favor, though, Sarge. Married men stand a better chance of avoiding fatal accidents in the home.
Is that a fact?
Mm-hmm. You know, in one state, 75% of the men involved in home mishaps were unmarried.
Well, I'm sure glad I'm married.
Because the accident odds are better?
You know, because I like my wife. Even when she first wakes up in the morning.
Mm, that
That's my Donald. That's my doll.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Midnight Sun Matter. Within a few minutes after I met him at the airport far east of town the next morning, Cliff Murray had the big twin-engine speed craft airborne, and we were heading north to Alaska.
And in case you're interested, Dollar, you're the co-pilot on this run.
Oh, are you kidding? The only things I've steered around the sky since the war have been Piper Cubs small jobs.
You know something? When you get onto them, these babies are not only just as easy to fly, but a whole lot safer. Want to take over for a while?
Well, maybe later. Hey, how come you didn't take this big ship off at the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport?
Because of the cargo we have on board. Also, it was quicker and easier to get clearance. We're trying to make time on this trip. The boys up at the mine are a pretty worried bunch these days.
Oh, why?
Now, there's a big glacier on one side of the property.
Oh.
Flows down to make the Kanakai River. When it gets warm enough, a couple of months in the year to melt.
That's so?
But there have been a couple of big ice quakes this spring. Just like earthquakes, only it's ice. Now that glacier's heading for the property.
No kidding.
That's going to wipe out the airport and everything. Unless they can do something about it.
Like what? Divert the course of a glacier?
The engineers up there say they can do it. And we've got the stuff for them right here. This cargo we're toting.
What do you mean?
Oh, didn't you know?
Know what?
Well, we got enough TNT aboard to move a dozen glaciers.
Speaking of sitting on a powder keg... And this one had wings. But then after the first shock of realization wore off, well, I even took up Cliffy on his offer to handle the controls for a while. And he was right. The big plane behaved like a doll. By the time we reached Anchorage to pick up mail and food, why, I was all set to make the landing myself. However, with a cargo of TNT aboard, I was perfectly content to let Cliff set her down, which he did beautifully. Then within the hour, we headed north again over some of the wildest country I've ever seen.
Beautiful, though, Johnny. Its own way.
Yeah, I never realized there were so many lakes and streams up in this country, Cliff.
Most of them are loaded with fish, too.
Ah.
Yes, sir. So,
Oh, what is it?
I said, greatest fishing in this man's world is right down there below us.
Oh, watch your language, brother. I'm liable to strap on a chute and leave you to make the rest of the trip alone.
A fisherman, huh?
Yeah, you aren't kidding.
Yeah, one of my favorite spots, right?
Hey, what's the matter?
Nothing. Just a little twitch in my side, my belly. Doc said it was appendicitis last time, but he didn't want to operate unless... Holy... Baby, that was a sharp one.
Cliff, anything I can do?
No, it's going now.
Sure hope so.
Ah, sure, sure. Just came on kind of sudden, so... Hey, it's time to call the lads at the mine to be ready for us.
How big is the airport up there?
11,000 foot runway.
Really?
Sure. It's the only way to get stuff in for mines 100 miles around. Speedcraft 231, calling Consolidated. Go ahead, please.
Somebody on duty there at all times?
24 hours.
Roger, 231, go ahead.
We're over Fairbanks on the hour, Charlie.
Roger, Cliff, over Fairbanks at 1400 hours.
Then roll out the carpet. We'll set down between 1445 and 50.
Roger, Cliff, we'll be ready for you.
And that's that. In less than an hour, Johnny, we... Johnny, take over!
Sure, Cliff.
Never been this bad before.
Now, listen.
No. You listen. No. No matter what happens, take it easy. I'll tell you exactly what to... You can do it, Johnny. You can do it. Now, listen...
Act three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
With your permission, there's something I'd like to talk about for a minute.
No.
You know, too many times people try to escape from their responsibilities by having someone else take them over.
Keeps going.
There was Miles Standish, for example. He was much too busy to ask Priscilla to marry him, so he sent John Alden to pop the question for him. you know what happened. John ended up marrying the girl himself. Of course, if John had had a face like a flat tire instead of being the handsome guy he was, maybe Miles Standish would have married Priscilla instead. Well, actually, I don't know what got me started on this subject, and unless it was my thinking about people who represent somebody else. Take our State Department, for example. Being a representative is one of its biggest jobs. Through the Foreign Service, it helps the Justice and Treasury Departments handle immigration, narcotic, and quarantine problems.
Ah, there you go. There's
and the Secretaries of Agriculture and Commerce look to the Secretary of State to help keep their fingers on the pulse of foreign markets so they can keep the business firms and farmers of America informed on matters of import and exports. I guess the only connection between these facts and the courtship of Miles Standish is that, like John Alden, our State Department speaks for itself.
And they'll screw you and take your wife.
Oh, oh my God. The roundabout.
In a flat tire face. Yeah.
That was by far the strangest public service announcement I've ever heard in my life.
No, that was, now remember, these are commercials inserted by the Armed Forces Television and Radio Service. You know, so these are bits that they put in there for where the commercials would be.
Gee, that just makes it all the more disturbing.
That was their way of getting back at Uncle Sam for putting him through the draft.
Wow. So, yeah, Dave, you got a good one building up here, this story.
Yeah, he's flying. He just found out he's flying a plane full of dynamite, and the pilot has an appendicitis attack. Wow!
Does it get any better than that?
It does, believe it or else.
Gasp! Then let's wrap up Johnny Dollar. Well, maybe we'll have time for some music at the end, or a wheel of radio. Who knows?
And now, Act 3 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Midnight Sun Matter. The rest of this report will have to come to you from the records of the airport there at Universal Consolidated Mining Corporation, far above the Arctic Circle. Aboard the big cargo plane loaded with TNT, the pilot crippled with pain, I was a little too busy to make notes to scribble any fancy dialogue. Here, then, is the story as recorded at the tower of the airport.
The time is 2:35.
Well, there goes the boss's plane to pick up his daughter in Fairbanks, Charlie.
Hey, Paul, isn't Cliff about due with 231? He said he'd set down at a...
Speedcraft 231 calling consolidated.
Hey, is that Cliff?
Speedcraft 231 calling consolidated.
It doesn't sound like him. Hello, Cliff.
No, this is Johnny Dollar.
Dollar?
Yeah, it's his passenger. Go ahead, Johnny.
Cliff is... Well, look, I've had to take over for him. He's sick. Cliff is... Cliff will give me whatever instructions I need.
You sure you can make it, Johnny?
Johnny, this is Cliff.
Go ahead, Cliff.
Johnny can make it.
Well, what about that cargo, that TNT? Can you dump it?
I can't move to dump it, and Johnny can't leave the control.
Okay, then, Johnny, we'll give you all the help we can from here.
Thanks, Charlie.
Have you passed the Snake River marker?
In about 2 minutes, I think.
Okay, now just remember, your letdown is on a heading of 035 degrees from that marker.
035 degrees from the Snake River marker, roger.
And, well, now just take it easy, Johnny, and we'll get you down here okay.
Thanks, Charlie.
Well, it looks like we may have a problem on our hands.
Listen, if Cliff says Dollar can bring it down, he can. Just you take it easy when you talk with him.
Sure, Johnny. Stand by. Take it, Paul.
Johnny, this is Paul Foster. Go ahead.
Paul, we're having some trouble getting our landing gear down, so I'm make some steep banks and try to get it down by centrifugal force.
Yeah, good.
You might get the ground crew to stand by, though, because if we can't get the gear down that way, I guess we'll have to make a belly landing gear up.
Okay, Johnny, I got that. How much fuel have you got on board?
About 2,000 pounds.
Johnny, this is Charlie again. Now, listen.
Easy,
Charlie. Oh, yeah. Johnny, I saw you make your pass. It appears the landing gear door is partially open, which may indicate it's jammed.
Any suggestions?
Paul again, Johnny. The only thing I can think of is try to snap the gear out by a sharp pull-up to give it centrifugal force.
I've tried that, Paul. Results are negative.
All right. Then before we consider you coming in for a belly landing with all that TNT aboard, I'd like to use up some of that fuel. Maybe some of our brains down here can think of something that'll help you out.
Okay. Okay, we'll go ahead with the regular procedures and whatever else we can think of, and then we'll give you another call.
Okay, Johnny.
The time is 2:41.
Johnny? Johnny, this is Paul again. Have you tried to shear the lock pin on that landing gear? Go ahead.
Negative. No, we haven't tried that yet. We want to make sure the doors were not jammed partially closed and perhaps make it impossible to get all the gear up again. You know, if we do have to make a belly landing.
Yeah. Okay. Johnny, have you got full hydraulic pressure?
Yes, that's affirmative.
Okay. Now, the crew chief isn't up here at the moment, but I'll ask him to come up and he can discuss it with you.
Right.
Johnny, if it does become necessary to make a belly landing because of the setup they have for handling accidents, you might be better off to do it at Fairbanks. Have you thought about that?
I talked to Cliff here. He doesn't think they'd want us to try it with this TNT we've got aboard.
We'll radio to him and see. Meanwhile, if anybody comes up with any idea at all, we'll pass it on to you right away.
Okay. I'll give you a gas check in a few minutes.
Okay.
The time is 2:50.
Johnny, Don Wilkins, our chief engineer, would like to talk to you. I'll put him on the horn.
Johnny, this is Don Wilkins. Have you tried the landing gear handle up and down quite a few times to see if it extends any further at any time?
Yeah, we've tried it several times.
Well, I think I'd try it as many times as possible, Johnny. There could be something binding that may break loose. Now, there's something on it. There. Well, it comes off the gear door latches, all right, so it isn't a latch.
I'll try it a few more times.
The time is 3:00. Exactly.
Johnny, this is Paul. How's your fuel situation stacking up now?
Oh, you have about 950, about 960 pounds.
Well, for your information, Fairbanks have advised that they can't take your airplane there because they're jammed up and couldn't clear the field in time.
Well, yes, okay. It doesn't look like we'd have enough gas to go over there anyway.
Johnny, this is Don Wilkins again.
Go ahead, Don.
If you feather the number 2 engine, and then just as you unfeather it, slam the gear handle down, well, maybe the additional torsion that you get may free the gear.
Okay, Don, we've already tried that, and we came up negative. I think we're stuck with that belly landing.
Johnny, this is Paul. We'll get everything ready for you. Are you VFR in this vicinity? You know, under visual flight rules?
Yes, affirmative.
Johnny, there's one more thing we'd like to have you try. And that is completely unload your hydraulic system and then try free-falling your landing gear. Did you get that?
I did that twice, Don. No luck with it. But we'll try it again.
All right, Johnny. Fine.
The time is 3:28.
Johnny, we're going ahead with preparations for a belly landing down here. I see you buzzed the field a couple of times, so you know how much room you've got.
You think it looks like much from up here?
Now, listen, we're going to foam the runway for you. You hear me? Put foam on it. We're doing it now, and that'll kill some of the friction. And if we can get enough on, it'll help against fire if you have any trouble.
How's the wind down there?
It's south, about 3 miles an hour, just light breeze.
Well, I want to know in case this thing slides off to one side or the other. I don't want to run down any of the other airplanes I can see down there. Not if we can help it.
Okay, Johnny, take a run directly over the runway and get the feel of it.
Will do.
The time is 3:31.
Johnny, we don't want to seem in the position here of telling you all your business, but I guess we've got to try everything anyone could think of.
Yeah, go ahead.
On this gear handle business, up and down, throw it in the up position. But just leave it there for a second, and then slam it down and leave it down for, oh, say, 30 seconds after you put it down. You get that?
Okay, we'll do that.
Now, we hate to be giving you all this intelligence all the time, but if anybody gets an idea, we pass it on to you for what it's worth. But you've got to be the judge.
We're glad you fellas are with us.
The time is 3:46.
Johnny, how's your fuel now?
I wouldn't bank on it much longer.
All right. They're laying foam on the runway like crazy. But that foam's only going to last about 25 minutes. Now, assuming they started laying the foam at 30, you should land not later than 55.
Yes, well, okay. You give us a word when it's completed. We're going to make one low pass and take a good look at everything. Then we'll come in and land. Okay?
Roger. I got your remarks.
The time is 3:51.
Hi, Johnny. I just wondered how you are and how things look to you.
Okay. You got a doctor standing by to take care of Cliff?
Sure, sure. Everything's ready for you. One comment. Listen. Do not, repeat, do not feather the engines when you sit down.
Got it. We'll comply.
Okay, Johnny.
Okay, we're all set, Don. We're going to make a practice pass over the field prior to the final landing.
Okay, Johnny, I won't be talking to you anymore. Paul will take over on your approach and get you down. We're all set for you when you arrive. Good luck.
Yeah. Okay.
The time is 3:54.
One minute, 48 seconds later, we've made a wheels-up landing. Cliff, the company doctor tells me his appendectomy was a complete success. A hard-bitten bunch of miners, did you say? Listen, those boys up in that lonely outpost are the salt of the earth. And as for trying to pull something on your insurance company... Well, you should have seen how just one good load of TNT put that glacier back on its course. Yes, sir. I hope the vein of gold never runs out for those boys. Expense account total, including gifts for the lads who really brought that plane down, $600 even. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote today's story. Heard in our cast were Gene Tatum, Frank Nelson, Russell Thorson, Barney Phillips, Harry Bartell, and Forrest Lewis. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Dollar has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Step right up.
Come one, come all.
Yes.
Greatest podcast within ear range.
Yep. Have no idea what this is, but it's cool.
It's called filler music on Armed Forces since they had to take out all the commercials.
Ah. It's amazing what they did for the soldiers
cool.
in
That's
that
why
war.
I left it in there, yeah.
You know?
What's that?
I said it's amazing what they did for the soldiers for that war to keep them entertained and try to keep their spirits
yep.
up, you know?
Well, this would have been Korean War time.
This one, yeah.
So,
but I mean, even going back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not just all the radio shows, but all the great traveling entertainers that would go to the different camps, no matter how dangerous it were. And
sure,
any
war. He had OSU, Bob Hope, these great radio programs, and Adrian Cronauer.
Mylena Dietrich did a lot of shows overseas.
Mylena Dietrich.
Yes. Hello. The Teutonic. The
twit.
What is Mel Brooks called? Twit. The
Teutonic twit in Blazing Saddles.
Now, did I tell you that was an exciting story?
It was.
It was
now
indeed.
Johnny,
very.
Good old Bob says now it's Johnny $10.
Yeah, they get well. I guess good old Bob has one of the garculators on him. Yeah, but
yes,
very interesting. I mean, this is a very atypical Johnny Dollar because it really wasn't about the place that he, the mystery of what he was being sent for. It was about, you know what? How they say getting there is half the fun. Well, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding.
A real thrill ride. Well, we got time left. We've got plenty of entertaining audio pieces here for you.
And even the moral time.
Yeah, before we get to that, we must have a moral. It's almost like one of us wasn't paying attention. Won't mention any names. Erie House Radio. Proudly resents a garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar, if you're going to land a plane full of dynamite and you have no wheels, it's best to do it on the radio. There you go.
Hello. I'm Mr. Red.
No idea.
I thought you would have deleted that clip.
No. Gotta keep Mr. Ed around now. Gotta keep Mr. Ed and a few other choice sound bites.
Oh my. So CW, where shall we go? Where shall we go, CW?
What would be your pleasure?
Oh, let's have a song. Perhaps a song?
Oh, at least one.
Yeah, maybe a twin spin. You never know.
All right, well, I think I got a wooden nickel here. Yeah, let's put it right in the jukebox.
stumbling all around, stumbling all around, stumbling all around. So funny, stumbling here and there, stumbling everywhere, and I must declare, I stepped right on her toes, and then she bumped my nose. I fell down, but when I rose, I was so ashamed, and I told her, that's the latest step, that's the latest step, that's the latest step. Oh, honey, notice all the pep, notice all the pep, notice all the pep. She said, stop mumbling, even though you keep stumbling. I like it just a little bit, just a little bit, quite a little bit.
Song, I'm telling you right now.
Hey, we still got time to spin that wheel, Dale.
That we do. I strained my shoulder.
All right, well, let's let CW do her Vanna White impression and go up to the wheel.
And here I come. I'm striking a pose, Vanna style, and here we go.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
For a long time, I've been thinking about getting an insurance policy. Not so much that I've been thinking about it, but I know an insurance agent, and he's been thinking about it. This is the way it happened. A couple of weeks ago, as I came out of the studio after broadcast, I met this agent who'd been in the audience, and I said, "Hello, Harvey, I see you just came out of the show."
Yeah.
Well, how'd you like it?
Very good.
Thanks.
Henry.
Yes?
You need insurance. I'm your friend. Don't let another program... I mean, another week go by.
I shouldn't, huh?
Listen, face the facts. You know how many ways there are to die.
Your company sells them?
Why, Henry, there's death by strangulation, death by asphyxiation, death by accidental shooting, death by on-purpose shooting, death by hanging, death by poisoning, and, if you'll pardon the expression, you could drop dead.
Well, that's probably just for poor people.
There's death from floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, typhoons, death by falling from heights, death by heights falling on you.
No wonder anybody's alive.
There's death from sulfuric acid, hydrochloric acid, acetic acid, acid stomach, acid indigestion, and acid.
I never touch this stuff myself.
Well, Henry, you can't be lucky forever.
Yes,
and it's not only you. Something could happen to your wife. Something could happen to your wife's mother.
How much does that cost? Anyway, after he got through talking, I didn't feel too well. And who was I to fight the insurance trust? But I couldn't get the policy until I'd seen the insurance company doctor.
Well, Mr. Gorgon, what are you here for?
Morgan, and I'm interested in a 20-year endowment policy.
Oh, yes. Take off your clothes.
Well, okay.
Now put them back on.
Well, aren't you going to examine me?
Oh, no, I just wanted to see you tie that bow tie.
Oh, I see.
Now, let me see. I ought to ask you something. Oh, yes. Do you suffer from headaches?
Yes.
You too? Oh, my headaches are killing me. My back's been bothering me for years. Every spring and every fall, I get the grip and my foot hurts. I wish I knew a good doctor. But tell me, Mr. Organ.
Morgan.
Yes, of course. Tell me, Mr. Gordon, do you have any trouble with your internal Morgans?
Just in the gas pipes.
Oh, yes, in the gas pipes. Well, now, let's see, you ought to do something else. Stick your tongue out.
Yes?
Oh, my, what is wrong with your tongue?
Nothing at all, nothing wrong with my tongue.
Well, then, why do you talk so funny?
Because my tongue's out. Has got.
Yes?
Has got it back in now?
Well, all right, but the way you talk, I'm sure you're not normal.
Am I through now?
Oh, no, no. They make me give you a blood test.
They make you. Don't you want to?
Oh, no, the sight of blood makes me faint.
Never mind, Doctor. My blood was tested.
Well, how did it make out?
It failed in spelling. Am I through now, Doctor?
Well, just one or two questions. Do you have an involuntary thrombosis or a deviated septum?
Gosh, no, I can't afford things like that.
I'll give you a break. I'll put down yes. Do you have a nervous disorder?
I'm getting one.
Oh, that's good. Do you have neuritis, arthritis, sciatica, lumbago, or gout? Choose one.
Well, I finally passed and went back to the insurance agent to get my policy, and he said...
Well, Henry, tell you what kind of policy I'd like to see you have. That 20-payment life.
What's that?
After 20 payments, you get a year's subscription to life.
Well, let me look at the policy, will you? Oh, say, this looks pretty good. Here in paragraph 34, section 91, it says, I get $10,000 in case of snow blindness, provided I live in Miami. That's pretty good. Section 81 says, I'm guaranteed against harpooning while in swimming. Happens every day. Says here, if the George Washington Bridge caves in while I'm on it, the company repairs my car. Nice. It's a big comfort. I see, though, I'm not covered in case of baldness.
Who is?
Yes,
I hope you notice paragraph 91. You get a $50 bonus for triplets after the third set.
Grand. Say, tell me something. What happens if I get in an accident?
You may get killed.
Well, what happens if I get sick?
We pay you $100 a week for 6 weeks.
Well, what if I get out of bed before the 6 weeks?
Why should you?
We're all set. I like that. That's pretty good.
We're all set now, Morgan. Who's your second beneficiary?
What did you say, sir?
We're all set now. Who is your second beneficiary?
My second beneficiary? Who's my first beneficiary?
The president of our company. Will you meet him, Henry? You'll be crazy about him.
He sounds delightful. I'd be glad to leave my money to him.
Most wonderful of all, Henry. The death benefit of this policy pays so much money that you'll be able to retire for the rest of your life.
I'll take it.
Miss Henry Morgan buying an insurance policy. There you go.
There you go.
You know, we ought to do this again next week.
Should we?
Only instead.
Whatever would we do?
Haunted things. Haunting. Ooh, yeah, that gives us back to the horror with Inner Sanctum, Crisis, and Mysterious Traveler on Friday, and the return of CBS Radio Mystery Theater to Saturday night. That's next week at 6:30 and 6:30, as you know.
Wow. Now I won't be confused on the times anymore.
Yeah. It's always, that's all you got to know, 6:30. There you go. And don't forget to go check out Brother Gar at Horrible Horror, starring the man, the myth, the legend, Gar the Ghoul, blah, blah, on them their Twitches.
Say it with heart next time, will you?
Yeah. I'm reading the teleprompter, man. What do you want?
Yeah, I got a new light kit for our filming. And Mike said, that's really neat. How big are the letters on that teleprompter? I said, no, it's a light kit. Oh, my. I got to get Mike some stronger glasses, you know. Maybe some whiskey instead, you know.
Whiskey, good.
Stronger glasses. Yeah.
Stronger whiskey.
See if Best Buy is having a sale on bionic eyeballs.
Yeah, I can buy the eyeballs, but they can't afford to put them in.
Oh.
They just have to watch themselves.
Oh, my gosh. Where's the screaming goat when you need them?
Ah, such a comforting sound. It's right up there with...
Thanks to good old Bob and Fogsbane, who were with us live in the chat, as was Angel Asylum.
Angel Asylum, yes.
Yeah, good old Angel's getting there. She's feeling better, so hopefully maybe she'll come by and visit. But it is time for the Vince Man to say goodnight, folks. Thanks for stopping in.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And
when next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
That was perfect.
Ooh. Yep.
Wow.
I am looking
right
for a place. All the Vincent
second.
Price recordings. Yeah. What's recordings of, I'm looking for, I have all these recordings of Vincent Price. I'm looking for him to say them. And then we could take out him and turn it to them. And we'd be all set. But as of yet, I've not found Vincent Price saying them.
No. Anything from the Thriller? When he did the Thriller, anything?
I'd have to think. So that's how the music with it too.
There's a snippet. There's a snippet from of when Joan Rivers was pinch hitting for Johnny Carson, where he did his part in Thriller. I don't know if the word "them" is in there. I'm thinking it may very well be. It's on YouTube.
Oh.
And
you know, Dale, there's that part that he did also that is just the recording of Vince doing the part.
Yes, there is.
Remember? You've heard that.
I have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way,
yes,
when we say them, there's only one thing to remember.
Make me a Sergeant Jackson!
That's right.
I knew it.
Love that. I love that part of the movie. Funniest thing I ever saw as a kid in a monster movie.
No, and it spilled over.
There was another comical moment with Fess Parker. What movie was it? Fess Parker was like a pilot. Oh, I think that
movie
was them also. Yeah,
the same exact movie. Yeah,
that's right. Fess Parker was
one of the first.
Thought he was
definitely
crazy
before he got Davy Crockett. Definitely before Davy Crockett.
Yeah, pre Davy. That's what's cool,
yeah,
seeing these old.
Go ahead.
No, just seeing some of these old horror movies, you see some people early in their careers. I was,
yeah,
for some peculiar reason, I was watching Beast with a Million Eyes, and Dick Sargent has a small role in it.
Wow. There's also the movie, I think it might be either Them or The Praying Mantis, but you see a very young Leonard Nimoy.
That was Deadly Mantis, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's like Twilight Zone, the original Outer Limits. So many people there that went on to such bigger things.
A lot of the Star Trek people, there was one with Scotty. There was one with Sulu. A couple with, as we know.
A couple with Shatner.
With Shatner. And there was one with Nimoy, with Adam. In iRobot.
Well, that was, The Outer Limits, yeah.
Yeah, that was...
The original iRobot, yeah. The original.
Yes. Yes, and Adam, his son directed him.
In the remake, his son directed him, yeah. So in the original one, he was the reporter. In the remake, he was the lawyer.
Oh.
Correct.
Yeah,
and also in the show One Step Beyond, you will see a lot of young actors in there.
Yeah.
And fabulous production value in the original one. And sadly, when they rebooted One Step Beyond, I don't know what happened, but it had some of the most... god-awful production value I've ever seen on anything that was ever on television.
Newman started doing mushrooms.
When he was doing mushrooms, it was in black and white. But when...
I'm not joking. I don't know about if they were psychedelic mushrooms, but there was some controversy. He was really... he had known Rod Serling very well, and I guess he was some controversy with him going to this other country to try these mushrooms. I don't know.
It's on YouTube. He went to Mexico, and some shamans there, they've been using it for centuries and centuries. So for them, it was not a recreational drug. It was part of a religious process before Christianity. So he went there. It is a variety of magic mushrooms. It wasn't the most narcotic variety. It pretty much would get you about as high as smoking a couple of joints, from what I've found out. So it wasn't LSD or anything of that nature.
Then why bother?
Never mind.
I have lost my mind.
Well, you know what? In the original run of One Step Beyond, it was Newland who directed and produced all the episodes of the two seasons. And it was still very popular on ABC. He decided it was time to go do something else. When they brought it back, I'm wondering if he didn't have the same control that he had when he did the original.
I'm going to guess not.
I'm going to say not. I mean... and I don't know who the casting director was, but quite frankly, with all due respect, most of the performers there looked like they'd had less than a semester of acting courses in high school, let alone college. I'm sorry. I mean, I've seen craptastic movies where you get at least some good performances. I mean, Jack Nicholson, when he was first starting out, was in some seriously B stuff, but you still got a good performance out of the man.
Yeah. He was
great
as the patient in the dentist's office in Little Shop, and as the soldier in what's that early one he did with Karloff and Price?
The Terror.
The Terror.
And It just doesn't, I don't know what was going on. I mean, was it a lot of nepotism? I mean, all the people they were getting hired to do the episodes, were they cousins of somebody's cousin or inbred cousin, or I don't know what?
I think what it was, it was a syndicated series, and the production company probably cheaped out as much as they could cheap out of the acting job.
Well, I know, but even if you're paying actors, you know, the scale that you get in SAG, you can still do better than that. I mean, geez, I mean, it was just, I mean, I've seen high school plays that were done better.
Yeah. What was your favorite?
I'm totally.
What was your favorite One Step Beyond? What was your favorite One Step Beyond?
Oh, the one that comes right off the bat. And another thing about One Step Beyond is because it was based on quote unquote things that had occurred, but the one that really, really touched me was with a very young Purnell Roberts, who was Adam Cartwright on Bonanza and Trapper John and D.
MD,
is
yeah.
When MD, yeah, it's the one about World War One, when they're in battle and they're all being charged with cowardice, and in World War One, more often than not, they'd line you up and shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
But it was called The Miracle of Mons, and supposedly more than a few soldiers said that they saw something very angelic. Either they were all having a...
Oh, I remember that episode now.
Yeah, the safe answer, everyone's having a mass hallucination, or something happened, or it was fatigue, or whatever, but there were hundreds and hundreds of soldiers on both sides who said they saw something that particular time. They couldn't describe it. Some of them said it was angelic, but that was an episode. Yeah, I know, and I looked that up, too. And it's in a lot of the history on university history sites, so it's very well documented that a lot of the soldiers said they saw something and they didn't understand what it was.
Ooh.
So,
my favorite one,
so
I'm a sucker for stories with pathos, so I like the one about the clown.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
My
favorite one, I don't know the name of it, but it's a couple that fought all the time. They were up to the summer retreat, and after one fight, she walks in the house and just disappears, and he gets... Well, they try to indict him for murder, and they can't because they can't find the body. And while he's in there looking, tearing the house apart, looking for her, she's the ghost of this woman who was a school teacher that was fired for being an abolitionist. And then she disappears, but then she had disappeared, and the house had like 3-4 different instances where persons had just disappeared, and at the end he also disappeared. I wish
wow.
it could be, but it was really that's the one that really stands out in my mind as one of my favorite episodes of One Step Beyond.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great episodes.
That'd be a great house to own, you know, just come on over. Let bygones be bygones. Go into that room.
Yeah. Next thing you know, he's bygone. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just it's so easy, you know, with Outer Limits and Twilight Zone, how well they were done, and how many memorable stories in each of those anthology series. How One Step Beyond gets overlooked sometimes.
I know, because it was just beautifully done. I mean, you had they had Christopher Lee. Sir Christopher Lee was in there. This was before he was doing Hammer Horror, and I forgot he was a German soldier. I don't know if somehow he was a Nazi soldier, but he gave a wonderful performance. He was in there as well. You had Charles Bronson was in there. As I mentioned, you know, Purnell Roberts.
A very young Warren Beatty was in the episode.
That's right.
But not Shecky Green.
About the anniversary. Yeah. I don't think
so. No Shecky.
Yeah.
No Shecky.
You know another show that gets overlooked a lot, and it was on, it lasted two full seasons, Outer Limits did not, was the Boris Karloff Thriller. That was a wonderful anthology program.
Yes.
Yes.
With many great episodes. And you're talking about a young Elizabeth Montgomery and two with William Shatner and one with the original Darren. I don't know. I can't think of his name. Dick York.
Dick York. Yep.
Yep. You
I
had
just watched that one not long.
Ago. John Carradine. So many, just like the Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, so many great people that showed up there, many of them young, looking for the television exposure to get them their own series. But,
Both of the Hitchcock series, too. Both of the Hitchcock series.
Right.
A lot of great young stars.
Good evening. I'm Alfred Hitchcock. Hello.
You make a good Hitch. You make a good Hitch.
And the funny thing is, though, if both Hitchcock and Thriller really rarely, if ever, had, supernatural aspects to them. Maybe they were a little off, but they were more crime and murder-related, I think.
I don't know. You know, one was about the Grim Reaper, one was about the broken glass.
Yeah, you had a few, but they didn't thrive on it in the way that, like, Twilight Zone and Outer Limits were really into the macabre, either horror or sci-fi, where often they were just really good suspense stories, particularly with Hitchcock, I think.
I agree with Hitchcock, but I don't know. I think, you know, because they were like
Thriller had a few
nine episodes that Karloff himself was in, in the Thriller, and those were all horror stories.
And darn good
Pitchfork and Hayseed, you know, there's a lot of them that have horror or supernatural type things to them. So I just would take issue with that one. But
I stand corrected.
But Hitch definitely, you know, that one was one that very seldom ever dealt with that.
And little documentary piece I was watching, how the only episode of Hitchcock that fell into the public domain and why it was considered to be too horrific, even though they didn't show anything, there was no gore, the idea of sawing a woman in half and the way it was presented, they thought it was too much. So it was cut from syndication for a long, long time, and then I guess it was resurrected later. But it had fallen into public domain, which is why that was one episode that I could show on Erie House TV when I had that thing running.
Cool.
Yeah.
There's one also with Darren McGavin that fell into public domain, and I.
Ooh.
The Chainsea Vase or something like that. It's
yes. Oh, that's right. We showed that one too on Memory House TV. It was so cool because almost all the tales from tomorrow are public domain. A lot of the old suspense. There were some good TV shows that we had to fill in.
You know what surprised me that isn't in public domain yet, and there are really some pretty decent stories, the science fiction theater, where they take an aspect of science and build a story around it. Those, to the best of my knowledge, have not yet fallen into public domain, I think,
was
one of the major studios.
Who were the spot? Wasn't there a fan club in Los Angeles that was a sponsor of that, the Science Fictioneers? Is that the one I'm thinking?
I don't know. It could be. It could be.
Because,
I didn't know that.
I think I've seen it on YouTube as to whether or not it was supposed to be there. I don't know. But I know that when you're talking about it, it is based on, they at least try to base it on some hard science.
Truman Bradley was the host of that. And he was, what's funny is, in the early suspenses, he was the announcer for that, but he ended up being, for that series, he was the host.
The host with
what
the most.
What was that name again? What was the name of that series again, Dave?
Which one? The Science Fiction Theater.
Science Fiction
Theater. Science Fiction Theater.
Ooh, have to look that one up.
And that's another one that has, I think I have a collection of all the episodes of Science Fiction Theater, but but it can't be used anywhere, to the best of my knowledge.
I believe all the episodes of The Veil are public domain.
Yes, I believe so too, yeah.
That's good stuff.
And there's like
a lot of
10 or 11 of them that I actually have found. When you add in, there's one I found that, when I thought they were all found, and then the pilot episode was part of GE Playhouse or something like that, and I have that
yeah.
as well.
Ooh. Which one is that title? Do you know offhand? Is that Whatever
no,
Happened to
no,
Peggy
no.
or Jack the Ripper, maybe? I don't know.
No. There's some debate about Jack the Ripper, what show that was actually on, because yeah, I think it was that. Because they also made a version of through a different front on that for, I forget what it was, the Hammer and ABC were going to do a horror series, and it mm-hmm. didn't work out.
There's a lot of those
ABC
Lights Out TV shows.
Yeah.
Climax had a few of those. It's a good one with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with, what's his name, Klaatu. Michael Rennie.
Oh, yeah, it? Michael Rennie, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yes, love Michael Rennie so much. Great.
Yeah. A lot of fun. Lots and lots of fun. I'm looking through my old tons of commercials. From way back.
Yeah, I wonder where I know I got all my thrillers collected somewhere. And that's where I have that pilot of. And the interesting thing about that, of course, since it wasn't a thriller, Karloff didn't host it. But he did appear in the episode, and he did in the other 10, 11 episodes, he appeared in at least three of them. And it was kind of like the one step beyond where it was supposed to be based on actual psychic events.
All right.
Yep, and I did find Science Fiction Theater. It is all over YouTube, so it must be in domain.
Yeah, it was a ton of good
TV, okay.
man. I miss programming that stuff. We had the Red Skelton show with Lugosi and Lon Chaney.
This was the ultimate.
Yeah, that's right.
Tales of Frankenstein TV show. That one episode. Good stuff.
Yeah, that's the other one I was trying to think of, science. Yeah.
Abbott and Costello meet the creature from the Black Lagoon. That's a good clip. Most people don't know that Evan Costello met the creature from the Black Lagoon on their TV show.
On their, on what, on the Colgate Comedy Hour?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that had to be from the 50s, obviously. The creature didn't come out until, what, 54, I think.
Yeah. Well, Dale, you know, when you get your TV show station back up and running again, I do have all the science fiction theaters. I think I have every episode.
Ooh. Well, if they fall into public domain.
Well, they are. Well, there's quite a few of them there on YouTube, so I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. It's all over the place. Full episodes.
Okay.
And I didn't realize it's also, a lot of it's in color.
It's in color.
It may have been, but...
Well, I don't know. There may be a couple of episodes that fell into public domain, and because it keeps going back and forth, so I don't know. But it's worth looking into.
Yeah. Now you made me want to pull those out and start watching them. Thanks, CW.
Good work.
Oh, my.
Times. Well, I think I'm going to let the doji out.
Oh, and my task, my pride, privilege, and pleasure to bring onto the stage, the one, the only, to tickle the ivories of Mr. Durante. We're waiting for you.
Oh, he better tickle.
Good night.
It's time to sail.
Good night.
What for this sake but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Everybody get ready.
We the same.
Everybody, an
ink-a-doo.
Good
night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
The foregoing has made it obvious to me that we've had quite enough for one evening. We shall save the rest until next week when I shall reappear. Until then, good night.